You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to forget about your out-of-pocket costs. That can be a lot of money. But are your bills accurate? Well, it's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. HealthLock can help you. HealthLock technology securely connects with your insurance and flags any overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. So to save, visit HealthLock.com today. That's HealthLock.com today.
This episode of Thinking Sideways is not brought to you by the battle cry of seagulls. Instead, it's brought to you by CrimeCon. That's right, CrimeCon is happening again this year on May 4th through 6th, 2018 in Nashville, Tennessee. It's going to be at the Gaylord Opryland. We're going to be there. A whole bunch of other podcasts are going to be there. A whole bunch of other famous TV personalities are going to be there. And you should really be there. We are going to have a live show on Saturday. So come and see us then. We'll release a time ahead of time once we've completely firmed that up. We're also doing a meetup that night, Saturday night. Time and venue to be released, and there might even be a special surprise in there, but we're not going to tell you that now. So you have to come and see it, and we will see you at CrimeCon. This episode is also brought to you by Stitcher Premium.
Yay!
So if you go to stitcher.com/thinkingsideways, you can sign up for Stitcher Premium using the promo code SIDEWAYS, and you get 1 month free. And the joy of Stitcher Premium is, of course, that you're going to get episodes 4 days early, you're going to get them ad-free, and we are putting out monthly bonus content on Down the Rabbit Hole. So all kinds of extra stuff available there for you. So stitcher.com/thinkingsideways, promo code SIDEWAYS.
Thinking Sideways.
Hey there, welcome to another episode of Thinking Sideways, the podcast. I am Devin, joined as always by
Joe
and
Steve.
Apparently I'm saying it for them now.
Yes.
Today we're going to talk about a not true crime mystery, or I guess maybe a true crime mystery.
It was probably an attempted murder.
Yeah, maybe.
But on a bigger scale.
On a gigantic scale.
Yeah, on kind of like a bludgeon cudgel scale, not like
global scale.
Yeah, totally, yeah.
Not a stabbing, no. Mm-hmm. It was blunt force trauma.
We're going to talk about the Tunguska event, and this was originally suggested by Joseph way back in 2015, which kind of seems like it was just yesterday, but that was a long long time ago.
It kind of was, I know.
I got to be honest with you. I kind of thought we had covered this story.
No, we haven't.
I've read enough about this, and this was seems just kind of our bag back in the day when we were doing the 25-minute episodes. I was like, we totally must have covered that one already.
No,
oh, my God, it's not on the list.
No, sorry.
Just weird.
We didn't do it.
No.
We're going to right now, though.
We've been planning
on it
for a long time.
Do you think it'll be longer than 25 minutes?
Maybe. Probably not much longer, though.
Okay.
Sorry, everyone. No, you like those long ones, but it's not going to be this one.
No, actually, this particular event has been thoroughly explored by some very credible scientists.
It has.
Not so credible scientists.
Yeah. Well, no, some credible, some not.
Yeah, some of both.
Yeah.
So if you are unfamiliar with the Tunguska event, it happened 110 years ago.
That's right.
In June of 1908, the 30th of June, to be exact, a huge explosion.
So big, the H isn't even pronounceable.
Anymore.
It's huge. Yeah.
A huge explosion rocked the isolated area of Siberia called...
Well, the isolated area of Siberia. Is there a not isolated area?
No, I'm sorry. It's a specific isolated area.
Even more isolated?
No, it's not even more. It's just one of the isolated areas because all of Siberia...
Pick a point in Siberia, it's isolated.
Yeah.
This one has
a name. It's called Yeniskesk Governance, now called something else that I'm not going to be able to pronounce. That was pretty close.
Okay.
This event took place close to the Stony Tunguska River, which is apparently the only way to identify things out there.
Yeah.
So it is called the Tunguska event, even though Tunguska isn't a place.
Actually, there is a town called Tunguska, but it's not exactly where the event took place.
Yeah,
but
it's 100 miles away or something.
Yeah, it's south of there, yeah.
I don't know, you might know this, when that became a place.
That I could not tell
and
you.
And if it became a place after it this might event. Have.
In memoriam? Recognition?
But also, by the way, this place does show up. The actual crater, not that there, the impact site does show up on Google Maps if you look.
Yeah. Well, the event area,
I think is
what we'll call it.
Yeah, I mean, it's marked on Google. It's like you can't actually see the
you
actual
can see it on,
effects
they've
of
drawn
it.
A line around it.
You can see it on Google Earth, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Super, super isolated place.
Yeah.
Like we said, it's Siberia.
Mm.
To this day, no one really knows what caused the explosion. The explosion is so big that it blew the H off of it. So
it was big. You know, hundreds of square miles of devastation.
It was. Yeah. So let's get into it. But just quickly, it's not a little ears warning. I just want to mention that at this time in Russia, they were still on the calendar. Yeah. I was like, wait, Gregorian? No, that's the one we're on now. So a lot of the eyewitness accounts and things you'll read say that it happened on June 17th, not June 30th. But I just want to get this out of the way so we're not getting emails from people who are like, you dummy.
Well, I know. It's still
it's actually the 30th.
We're so used to having one calendar that there's even people today that are under different calendars. But the Gregorian calendar started in, I believe, was it 1582 when Pope Gregory the 13th? Decided to knock 11 days off of October because apparently people thought October was getting too good of a deal.
Yeah.
So they took 11 days out, and so everything kind of shifted. But not everybody shifted to the Gregorian calendar.
Right away, at least.
Yeah, no, the calendar's been moved around a couple of times. I know there was at some point that the Russian people were on a different calendar that had them 2 or 3,000 years ahead of the rest of the world, as in everybody said, it's 1902, and they're like, nope, it's 6205. Like, there was just this weird, I don't know the exact numbers, but they did it a number of times. They shifted their calendar, and it makes it super confusing.
Well, you know, actually, we are reaching that point in our society where there's going to be enough Trekkies out there, they'll take over Congress and probably the White House, and it's going to be star dates, like star date 2307 or something like that here pretty quick.
I think so, too. Yeah.
You want to start putting in your diary with them.
Anyway, let's get back to this. Yeah. We're way off track already.
We are going to make this more than 25 minutes no matter what.
You sure are. I'm really sorry, everyone else.
Apologies.
As mentioned, the morning of the 30th of June 1908, an explosion that modern day scientists estimate was anywhere from 15 to 20 megatons caused about 770 square miles, which is about 2,000 square kilometers of trees to just blow right over. For those of us who have to look this sort of thing up, the atomic bomb that we set off in Hiroshima was about 15 kilotons, which means that...
Kilo and not mega, right?
Yeah, so that means that the blast was, at this estimate, at minimum 1,000 times more powerful than that atomic bomb, which is pretty powerful in 1908. Also, reportedly, though the blast completely flattened all of the trees, there were officially no reported deaths of humans.
Well, that's because the bodies were actually underneath the trees. Mm-hmm. They should have looked under the trees.
Yeah.
The reindeer just didn't report in.
Actually, the reindeer did die. A lot of
wildlife
did, yeah. But no humans, specifically because of the blast. At about 7 a.m. local time, natives and Russian settlers in the area reported seeing a bluish column of light, nearly as bright as the sun, streaking through the sky. About 10 minutes later, a very loud boom, is kind of an understatement, a very loud boom, was heard, and a shockwave powerful enough to knock people to the ground and shatter windows was felt hundreds of miles and kilometers away, both. And most of the eyewitness reports actually came from towns that are hundreds of miles away, but felt shockwaves that they likened to tremors or earthquakes. And it is actually estimated that many of those tremors were
equivalent to
about a 5.0 earthquake. So it was not nothing.
Not a little thing.
No,
no, it was not.
That's a pretty big shake of the earth. The explosion also caused some interesting atmospheric phenomenon, including reports that the night sky in Asia and Europe had a glowy quality to them. That is a technical term.
Glowy, kind of like aurora borealis.
That was where I was going to ask.
No, more like glowy, not like lights, kind of just like a shimmery iridescence to it.
Glowing in the dark kind of thing?
Yeah, kind of. Some people reported that the blast sound they heard sounded like it moved east to north, but I don't know if that really matters. And also, those people's positions aren't really specified, so I don't know how helpful that is.
It probably changes depending on where vantage point is.
Yeah, I would assume. This area of Siberia is so remote that it took more than a decade for the first investigators to come and try to figure out what exactly had happened. Actually, the Russian Civil War was also happening during this time, so it took almost two decades. It wasn't until 1927 that an exploration made it out there.
Yeah, I think this guy, what's his name? Leonid Kulik?
Yeah.
Kulik? Yeah, apparently he'd been out there like, 6 years earlier on some unrelated matter. He heard all these stories of this big, huge kaboom.
He was a mineralist.
Yeah.
So he was going out. I mean, his job was basically...
find minerals.
So his job was to go out and find minerals.
Yeah, for the Glorious Revolution.
Right, and you do that mostly in kind of isolated areas.
Like Siberia. Yeah. So he was out looking, and all these natives kept saying, there was this really enormous streak in the sky, and then this enormous kaboom.
Giant boom.
Yeah, and so it took him like 6 years, I think, to actually get the resources to come back and mount an expedition.
It actually took him a really long time to, probably kind of lie and convince his way, because the Soviet government at the time is actually what bankrolled his first expedition. And I think what he said was he was sure that it was a meteorite and that he was going to find meteoric iron here.
And maybe some of them fancy pants things they call rare earths or something
Stuff that was definitely going to further the cause of the Soviet government. So he basically said, hey, if you guys pay for me to go out and do this, I'll come back with a lot of really fancy, expensive, really worthwhile stuff.
Plus, if I screw it up, I'll already be in Siberia. You won't need to ship me out there.
Yeah. It'll be great.
Yeah.
Yeah. That didn't go so well, but we'll talk about that in a little bit, too.
I don't know.
When the expedition first arrived in the area, they asked some local tribe hunters to take them to the impact site, or what they were assuming would be an impact site of some kind. This proved challenging because the tribe believed that this whole event was actually a punishment sent down from a god.
AKA, we're not going there.
Yeah. There was also some talk of some kind of boogeyman creature that might live in that area, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I heard the story I heard is that the initial party went out, and the guys, before they got to the impact site, spooked and left. because of that scary boogeyman kind of creature.
Yeah.
And they had to go back to town and go get more guys to come back.
Yeah, it was just a really long, arduous task to get out.
It was a giant cluster.
Yeah, it was. It really was. When the expedition did finally reach the center, the epicenter of this explosion event, whatever.
They found a note.
They found a note. And it said,
no,
love, Choopy.
Yeah.
Just kidding. They really were expecting a crater because they thought, oh, a meteor hit and we're going to get some really cool rare earth whatevers, as
not
previously
to mention
mentioned.
Some really awesome pictures.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing. But when they got there, actually, they were really surprised to see that actually what was there was just kind of a giant ground zero area where instead of the giant hole they were expecting to see, there's actually a 5-mile patch of pretty undisturbed trees.
Well, I think they were disturbed.
They were disturbed, but they were still standing.
Yeah, I think their branches
were
gone.
They were flattened and completely mowed down.
They were burned. They were scorched. Their branches were, for the most part, gone. But you will remember that 700 square miles around this patch of 5-mile wide trees that are standing, everything was just flattened.
Can I stop for a second and just consider how difficult it must have been to walk and travel
through all those trees knocked down?
I mean, you think, well, I'm just walking through the forest. It's no big deal. But no, every tree is on the ground, and you can't take probably 2 steps with having to walk on and over a giant tree trunk.
I can't imagine how, because when I go out in the woods, you know, and I go through some area, some region where there's a lot of blowdowns from storms or whatever, it's frustrating.
Logging,
it's just annoying. Yeah. It's just, I mean, I start getting kind of...
You think about how slow you go.
Oh, yeah.
Think about these guys that are a party. It's not like they're taking their supplies with them, so it's not as if their horses could get through the area.
Oh, no.
Or at least not easily. I mean, that's just... It's a hell of a trek.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a long one. I mean, you know, it is. It's just... Anyway, it was tough. As mentioned, we were talking about this stand of trees that somehow still existed. Yeah, and the pattern that group established for the blast is actually accurate somehow. They were right in this, and they call it kind of an eagle. It's kind of swoopy.
Wing.
Did you guys get to see it?
Yeah, well, yeah. I've seen it also described. It took me a while to figure it out, but I've seen it also described as a butterfly or moth pattern.
Yeah.
Because it's got kind of the big lobes at the top and then the little lobes on the bottom.
But it's not just a circle or anything like that.
That's what I had always, until we started researching it, I always thought it was just a big circle.
Yeah.
Yeah, not at all.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
It's modernly estimated that this blast toppled more than 80 million trees, though I don't know about that, and I've never seen the reasoning behind that. Yeah, basically. Mm-hmm.
Probably aerials. They probably just like took an aerial and just took one teeny square and counted the trees and multiplied it by X. You know, and there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
During the expedition, Kulik found what are now called pothole bogs, but at the time he thought they were meteorite holes, though they were too deep for him to excavate, which, okay. He was going out there the sole purpose to excavate minerals, but fine, whatever.
If you watch, if you see some of the footage of them, they have standard spades.
Yeah.
They don't have any kind of equipment to suck water out of a hole, and that's what you need to drain a bog.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So I think that's why it was, we can't do it, because no matter how fast I shovel, the water keeps coming back in.
Totally, So Kulik did actually lead 3 more expeditions over the course of the next decade or so back out to this area, because apparently the one time climbing over felled trees for 12 days wasn't enough.
It was his unicorn?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. But so he had found those bogs and he thought, oh, there are meteorite holes and that's where the meteoric iron's going to be. This time I will not fail the Soviet government.
It's okay,
fine.
Comrade.
Yeah.
You actually can't blame him. I mean, I would go there expecting a hole in the ground too. So any holes in the ground I saw, I'd want to check them out.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Well, it turns out, so they brought the technology with them one of those 3 times to drain the bog and to get the meteoric iron out of the bottom of this bog on the hole in the center of a log and the tree and the toad and the... No? Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's fine.
It's a reference. We don't get it.
It's fine.
Okay.
I don't
get
it either. Yeah. Video game, I'm sure.
It's a camp song, but whatever.
Oh, okay.
They actually found at the bottom of the bog a stump.
A tree stump?
Yeah.
A tree stump from space?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
I think so.
Holy
no,
crap.
Actually, I think more of like a tree that had died. And
it was an old, old tree that was at the bottom of a bog, mm-hmm. which means that it couldn't have been recently made by this meteor.
Yeah. Most likely not. Yeah.
Bad luck, obviously. I'm sure the Soviets were less and less patient every time that Kulik came back to them and was like, listen, I know I promised you the meteoric iron. It's just not going to happen this time. I think they're just natural area bogs. I'll just full disclosure. I haven't ever seen anywhere a different explanation for them.
Well,
so I
bogs
just think
happen,
they're just,
know?
It's that's just a boggy area of Siberia.
Probably.
Which is fine.
It's like the shirt says, bogs happen.
There's a shirt that says that?
Well, there will be now.
I got to get one, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I'm going to make it.
Yeah, it's going to be
gonna
on
make
the
my fortune. T-shirts and say,
yeah,
happen.
That's how it's going to happen, I'm sure.
I'm going to be done with this little podcasting thing.
We'll miss you.
Make my T-shirt empire.
Okay, great.
Good luck.
You're going to run out of ideas for a T-shirt, though, without the podcast.
Yeah.
So, by this time, you may assume that the Soviets might have decided that bankrolling these expeditions was pretty pointless because the meteoric iron not coming through and blah, blah. But no, apparently not. There have been tons of expeditions, most
in
of which...
In the interest of science.
Yeah, they actually were kind of into the whole science thing.
Yeah.
Not necessarily for peaceful purposes, but they were
but
into
yeah,
that somewhat.
It would be kind of interesting to know what exploded that powerfully and if they could recreate it.
Why not?
So like I said, tons of expeditions over the years, some more helpful than others. In the 50s and 60s, they decided to start sifting the dirt, and they found tiny silicate and magnetite balls. On other expeditions, the suspicion that these balls would be found in the trees was confirmed. So that theory was confirmed that they're just...
Or at least lent some support.
Lent some support, yeah. And it did kind of lend support to the idea that something exploded really violently.
Mm.
And that
just
these were just...
material.
Yeah, that it was material spread from this thing. Still kind of weird that there's no crater, but whatever.
You know, there's been actually, scientifically speaking, there still is to this day a lot of scientific speculation about precisely what happened.
Yeah, that's why we're doing a show on it.
Yeah, I mean...
I know, it seems crazy, but...
But believe it or not, there's still not a totally satisfying answer out there.
Which, again, is why we're doing a show on it.
I know. Yeah. Oh, is that why? Okay.
Yeah, yeah, because it's still unsolved.
No, I mean, the point that I was trying to get across is that this isn't just confined to the realms of, you know, like conspiracy theories and stuff. There are actually
a lot of scientists have been really
looking into this hard for a long time, and not just Russian ones either.
The composition of those balls, just briefly, was consistent with an extraterrestrial thing of some kind. Again, that is the scientific term, okay? So don't email me about that. Thank you. On later expeditions, the samples of flora in the area, especially bog peat, were taken, and they found genetic damage similar to what you would find from a nuclear explosion.
Chernobyl.
Yeah, I've read some claims that people in the surrounding areas also suffered from genetic mutations on just a genetic level, not like suddenly they grew a third arm out of their torso or whatever.
No fun.
I know, the not fun kinds. But I wasn't really able to suss out the sources for that or if there had been good documentation on any of that. That's the sort of thing that, you know, you're watching the fifth BBC or History Channel thing.
I love the air quotes on that.
Yeah, History Channel documentary on this. And they say in passing, the people in the area were also affected on a genetic level, but that's like it. That's
I'd like to get some explanation as to that and what did it, because there's other factors out there too.
Totally.
I mean, background radiation varies quite a bit from geographic location
to
location.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Worth mentioning here briefly is there's a lake that we're going to talk about in a minute, so shut up.
A lake!
That's about 5 miles or 8 kilometers from the ground zero where all of the trees are still standing. That some people have speculated could in fact be a crater site. In 2017, some people suggested that the lake was created by a fragment of a meteor. But
not an entire meteor, but just a portion of one.
Yeah, but
actually, I think the original suggestion was well before 2017, right?
We're going to go deeper into this in just a minute, but in 61, scientists did some sampling of the lake and estimated it had been created 5,000 years ago, so
Because they took samples of the rock
and sediment. Yes. Yeah.
Because that's really the way that you figure out how old the lake is how much crud is built up on the bottom.
Well, it can be. Yeah.
Crud, dead animals, Nessie. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the lake is another huge source of, it's a hot topic with scientists.
And good news, we're going to talk about it, I know. In a minute.
I just wanted to give people something to look forward to.
Oh.
Because I know our listeners love hot topics for something, hot science topics.
Hot science topics.
I was about to say, we're not at the mall at Hot Topic. People don't love that place.
Different Nobody likes it. Topic. It's just full of teenagers and angst. And
actually, that's where
angst and acne.
Yeah.
That's where I buy all Black your lights. Gifts, Devin.
I don't think that's true, but okay. Anyway,
I think it really is. I've had to argue with him on Christmas.
We're getting punchy. And I think this is like a good time to start moving on to theories.
Okay.
Wow.
Our first theory is a subatomic collision or antimatter theory. Dun, dun, dun.
Mm. Okay. I'll let you run with this.
So this guy is a fun one. That's why we're starting off with it.
Yeah.
Truncated from the Wikipedia, because sometimes they just do a better job of doing the explain like I'm five thing than I ever
Listen, I go to children's websites sometimes. Yeah. Like, I get it.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's that whole thing where Einstein said, if you can't explain it to a five-year-old, you don't understand it, right? I do not understand this stuff. Okay. I'm not even going to pretend.
You don't get it? Okay, yeah. Well, spit it out.
Yeah. Lay it out.
So antimatter comets, and that's what the theory would be, is that this would be an antimatter comet or meteor, is a hypothetical comet or meteor composed solely of antimatter instead of ordinary matter. You guys know what the difference between those things are, right?
Yeah. It is a brain melter, but yes.
It's not actually even a brain melter. Just reverse the charges on all the particles, and there you go.
Yeah, it's basically
smart guy.
It's the opposite of everything that we are, and antimatter and matter balance each other out, but for some reason there's just enough more matter than antimatter to allow life.
And nobody knows why.
It is a brain melter situation. Anyway, there's a theory that there are comets because, you know, if there's matter comets, there's antimatter comets.
They don't matter.
We just don't know. Are they off in another corner of the universe? Or
who knows?
Are they
blazing around or what's going on?
Interspersed, maybe?
Yeah.
I mean, it might be that we'll arrive at the nearest star and planet and everything. It'll be antimatter. Mm-hmm. And we go to land and kapoof.
Yeah, they're all hanging out in the corner of the galaxy gymnasium smoking cigarettes together.
Exactly. Because
it just doesn't matter, man. It just doesn't matter.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, they're the French philosophers of the material universe.
I was thinking they're more the kids who are like outside the old defunct auto shop class just like smoke cigarettes.
Yeah.
Anyway,
basically antimatter smokes is what we're getting.
Apparently. The theory here would be that what actually happened was we had an antimatter collision.
An object of some sort. Yeah.
And that was what caused this explosion. There are actually some interesting theories. We talked about ball lightning in an episode one time.
Yeah, when we did skyquakes.
Yeah, there's actually a theory out there that antimatter comets actually cause ball lightning. I don't understand it. Still don't understand it. Don't ask me to explain it. You have your quizzical face on.
I was trying to remember.
That.
We talked about ball lightning another time, and I'm trying. It was another one of my episodes. It was the one of the lights episodes.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But the thing about it is. An object the size of a comet made of antimatter, it wouldn't just cause ball lightning. I mean, the release of energy would be enormous.
Cataclysmic.
Like a 10 megaton.
Like that's probably what killed the dinosaurs level stuff.
Actually, that is what those theories are a little bit.
I suspect that something the size of a comet hitting the planet Earth that was antimatter would be a lot bigger than Tunguska.
Well, the problem is here, and we'll talk more about this kind of in the comet meteor theory, but the problem is that for something big enough made of matter or antimatter to survive through our atmosphere, it has to be bigger. It would have been made a bigger explosion. But if it was little to make an explosion of this size, it would have just disintegrated in
long before it got that close to the surface.
Yeah, exactly.
Although, you know, just fun science fact, actually antimatter hits the Earth every day.
Constantly.
And actually that's what I was going to say is the bad news for this theory is that in 1958, they were able to disprove that by the size that it would have had to have been, it would have either been kill all the dinosaurs kind of explosion, or it would have totally disintegrated in the Earth's atmosphere, because that's what they usually do. Apparently.
So this one doesn't matter.
So it doesn't matter.
No, it's a cool theory, though. I like it. I hope that if an antimatter comet comes by one of these days, that it won't hit us.
It could hit one of those other dumb planets.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way about just matter comets, for that matter. I don't, no pun intended. I don't want either one of them hitting us.
I don't really either, yeah. Yeah. The next theory is that it was an alien craft that exploded.
Yeah, I like this theory.
This one has been around a long time, because I remember hearing this one when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Because this story has been around a long time.
Since, I think it probably happened when you were like 9 or 10.
Well, up yours.
No. This story has been around for 110 years, actually. And people have been fascinated for at least 90 of those years.
It wasn't until like the 60s or so and you started getting a lot of paranormal type books coming out.
Slowly started leaking out of the Eastern Bloc. But it had that weird mystique because, they were keeping it behind the Iron Curtain and you didn't know what was there. So there was, it had a different flavor and a different panache is not the right word, but it got people going.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Still does, actually, I think, a lot of times.
Yeah.
The theory here, the most prevalent theory that I've seen, the reason for the alien craft being there and being so low to the ground is that it was... That lake, you remember we were talking about, it's Lake Checo close by. The theory is that Siberia would be a place that an alien craft who was just trying to do research, scientific recon research. It's isolated enough that...
Yeah, makes sense.
That would be the kind of place that they would want to go to not get caught. So the theory is that they were trying to take some water samples or something like that, or... fuel up with water. They were doing something with the water in the lake, in Lake Checo, and somehow it just exploded.
Somebody hit the wrong button.
They were trying to put something in Mr. Fusion and
Well,
that gets back to what I was saying when we talked about the secret base in Antarctica, is you can be confronted with these aliens who have this fantastic technology, and that doesn't mean they're not just dumbasses.
Yeah.
They can totally be just dumb.
Yeah.
So I think somebody hit the wrong button, but when I was a kid, the first time I ever heard this story was in a book that I've referenced before, Stranger Than Science by Frank Edwards.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about this one. And his theory was the alien craft came down to Earth, and it was like an emergency ditch kind of deal because their positronic reactor was overloading, and they were going to blow, and they needed to find a place to land right now. And so they picked Siberia because it's the most isolated place, so... Yeah, if it did blow up, then not as many people would get killed on the ground.
Oh, that was nice.
And so that was very nice. I thought so too. So that was his theory: is that it was a desperate alien trying to land his craft, but he didn't quite make it in time.
It does seem like parts of alien craft would have been found.
Yeah.
If that were in fact what had happened.
I actually have a counter to that.
Okay.
So have you ever built a boat you ever built the paper boat, you fold it and then you float the little paper boat down the waterway or down the gutter or whatever?
Yes.
So now you just scale that up and you slap some nuclear reactors on there and there it is, the paper alien craft. It exploded and burned up.
You're saying that interstellar travel is done by paper?
But you've got to use about 120 bond though. That crappy 40-pound stuff just will not survive. Reentry.
I guess another theory similar to that could be that the Leonardo da Vinci spacecrafts that were made out of wood were actually feasible, and that's actually is actually an alien, and he was just trying to tell us that
he was trying to go home.
Yeah,
he was ET,
and then maybe it was Leonardo.
It did explode.
Maybe somebody reanimated his corpse and said, "Hey, dude, let's see that spaceship. Come on!" And so he tried; it didn't quite work out. You know,
it blew up, and
this crude wooden nuclear reactor just couldn't quite handle the stresses.
All right, so we've stomped all over that.
We have, but the only thing I will mention here is that the Russians did do one exploration of the area in 2004 and apparently found some stuff but haven't publicly released what they found. Which doesn't surprise me. They probably didn't actually find anything and people are just blowing this way out of proportion.
Marijuana.
But,
probably found a giant weed farm
out
there.
I don't know. Next theory?
Oh, let's hear the next theory.
Tesla.
Tesla, the car?
Nope.
I love those
cars.
Well,
there's one in space.
Not Elon Musk.
It could someday crash down and cause an explosion on that planet.
That would be ironic.
He's just sending it to Rainbow Road, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah,
but
no, it would actually be ironic if the thing actually came back down and it crashed on that exact same spot.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
But I don't think it's accurate. I think it achieved escape velocity, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah,
it's not
floating
coming
around
back.
Somewhere near Mars or something.
It's not in orbit. Yeah.
Yeah. It's supposed to
Unless
be
it gets bumped back.
Mars.
Like a giant intergalactic game of pool.
Yeah,
and bounces back. That'd be kind of fun.
Anyhow, let's talk about this theory seriously.
Okay.
It was actually Nikola Tesla, the, famous energy guy.
The smart guy.
Scientist. He apparently had a giant tower that he was working on building. I had read in Colorado Springs, but Joe tells me I'm wrong about that place.
I heard it was Long Island, New York.
Okay.
Yeah.
Somewhere in America.
That was called Wardenclyff Tower.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And he wasn't building it specifically, right? He was repurposing some kind of tower that was already there.
I don't know if he built it from scratch or not. I know that there was already a building there. They built it on top of this building.
Yeah. But it was supposed to be this giant broadcast energy tower, apparently, that could broadcast 10 billion watts of power worldwide.
Tesla was all about beamable energy.
Wireless energy, which,
cool
in
idea,
theory, cool, sure. I don't know about the 10 billion watts, but maybe. I don't know.
Just don't become tower. Don't come between Tower A and Tower B.
Basically,
That's a no-fly zone.
Yeah.
Lots of dead pigeons in that area.
Uh-huh. Yeah. The crux of this theory goes generally that Tesla was mad at JP Morgan for not funding the end of this building project.
Yeah, apparently JP Morgan had cut off the funding for it. He had bankrolled it originally, but then decided he wasn't seeing results. So screw you, Tesla.
So Tesla decided to show off the power of it or something. It's not really well fleshed out here what the reasoning was behind it.
I think the plan was is that Tesla was going to give a demonstration by shooting a massive bolt of energy, because apparently, if you read about this theory, he was also, besides the transmission through the air of electricity, he was also working on this sort of death ray.
Yeah.
Although he preferred to call it the peace ray.
I saw one of the websites refer to it as the rest in peace ray.
I don't know if people call it the peace ray because it would be such a scary weapon that war would become non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
Although I got news for
doesn't work out that way. But
no, I mean
nice
everybody
try.
Everybody said that about nuclear weapons; they would make war obsolete. Well,
sure.
It didn't really work out that way.
Yeah.
But anyway, he was going to put on to show the world everybody was skeptical. He was going to put on a demo by shooting a massive bolt of energy at the North Pole.
Yeah.
And that would show people
what
he had going there.
And what was the name of the explorer that he told?
Robert Perry.
Yeah. He was headed to the North Pole, apparently, at that time. And he told Robert Perry, watch for unnatural phenomena while you're out there. Ha ha. Wink, wink. Yeah,
but that could mean anything. Again, out of context. This is an underlying tenet of this show. Out of context, anything can mean anything.
Yeah.
Well, if the meeting even took place. I checked on Perry's last expedition, or his 1908 expedition. And they left New York City July 6th, 1908, which was after the Tunguska event.
Right. Well, it's a little possible even that by that time they had heard about the Tunguska event.
Within a week, I don't
Probably
think
not.
So.
I mean, I don't know.
I doubt that.
Yeah, it seems unlikely, but...
The thing about it is you read about this story in multiple places, but I don't know if it's actually got any basis in reality or if it's just everybody... Somebody made it up and it's all been cut and pasted.
I think people just like to have Tesla be this...
He is in every frickin' story. Don't get me wrong. The guy was very smart and did some amazing things.
Yeah.
But he is involved in very positive and very negative ways in so many stories that it's just... There's no way he could have had any time to do any of the things we know he did and do all those other things.
Yeah.
I'm sure he did at least a few weird, otherworldly things.
Oh, I'm sure he
did.
Yeah, but I don't think this was it. Next up is what I'm calling the Bogle Chandler. It's actually the idea of natural gas buildup igniting somehow.
Mm-hmm. As mentioned. Me of college.
Yeah, it's pretty similar to the theory behind that Bogle Chandler case, as I mentioned a minute ago, and a couple others that we've talked about.
And this fits in with those bogs you were talking about.
Yeah. There are a ton of bogs in that area, and some scientists have speculated that there could have been a buildup. Okay. These are all, every number in this story is just Dr. Evil-esque, you know?
Yeah, big numbers. Yes.
It's like 100 billion. This one is 10 million tons of gas could have built up in that area over a period of time and then exploded, which, okay.
It's possible.
But, yeah, the idea that you get all these decomposing, you know, plants and everything, and you get this layer of methane gas down there, but it's frozen all the time, and it keeps accumulating, and then one day you have just an unseasonably warm summer, and it, all that ice melts and starts gassing off, and next thing you know, you got this huge, enormous, essentially fuel air mixture bomb hanging over the countryside.
And a rock falls and causes a spark.
Well,
and boom.
Yeah, or one animal lighting a cigarette.
Yeah, that's why they all died.
Damn squirrels.
Well, it could have been ignited by actual lightning because, as you may recall, the eyewitness reports did say there was a bolt of blue light. They said it was blue light, but it, who knows what it could have been.
I will say, you both remember, this was 2+ years ago. All those reports out of the Soviet bloc started showing up of these giant holes in the ground.
Yeah.
And they couldn't figure out. And one of the prevalent early theories was there must be, as Joe described, these giant pockets of gas that, as things warmed up, all the gas heated up and was released, and then something ignited it to make these. Now, we've figured out since then, they're pretty sure they're actually just sinkholes.
Yeah.
Because no material was ejected away. But that's, that was the first thing I thought of after I got past my paper UFO ship idea, was that it must be just a giant gas bag that exploded.
It could be, although it's, you'd think that it happened more often.
You would. Yeah.
And maybe it did, because there are those places in, oh, Lord, what is the place? There's some lake in Europe that is known for, or not Europe, in Asia, that is known for having lights at night.
The Min Min lights?
And, no, but they figured out on this lake, it's in Asia. The Min Mins are in Australia.
Sorry.
But they figured out that it's gas that is leaking and occasionally igniting, and that's why people say that this lake is on fire all the time. It's just natural gas leaking out, and something in the atmospheric conditions set it off. I don't think that's what this is, but
either.
It is very easy to say, on a grand, massive scale, that would make sense to explain what happened at Tunguska.
It would, except for the stand of trees that was unaffected. That,
that is the
isn't
weirdo
really
that.
Explained.
There's,
there's a second part of this theory, and that is a thing called Verdenschart.
Verdenschart. Verdenschart.
Verdenschart, which is basically an underground volcanic eruption, but from gas. I don't understand it. I can't explain it like I'm five.
I think that's kind of the sinkhole thing that we were just talking about.
So
it's a bunch
too.
Of gas underneath and then it...
Yeah, I think so too, but I don't think it's likely because it doesn't make sense with the tree pattern, the tree fall pattern. I don't think that...
That would have been probably...
It feels worth mentioning at
least. Yeah, there probably would have been evidence of this sort of weird quasi-volcanic activity, don't you think?
I would, but... The only thing I will say is that the tremors, you know, it was basically earthquakes, so it could have been, I don't know.
Volcano-y?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, next theory?
Another theory?
Oh,
there's more?
Volcano-y is not our final theory?
No.
Sorry, I just like that technical term that Joe tossed out there.
Volcano-y, yeah.
We've been doing a lot of technical terms in this
we
episode.
We have.
Yeah.
I'm going to make a whole bunch of t-shirts from this episode.
It's the final theory in... It is that it was a meteor or a comet or something like that.
Hmm.
The big problem that people seem to have with this comet meteor theory is the lack of a crater, which I agree with. I think that's a problem.
That is the deal. And that's because, I mean, it's not at all unusual for a decent-sized meteor to come rocketing in and explode in the atmosphere and not ever contact the Earth. Like we had that one, was it 5 years ago in Russia?
Another one in Russia.
Chelyabinsk. Chelyabinsk. And that one, which we all remember, never touched the surface at all.
Mm-hmm.
And but the problem here is like that the numbers don't quite pencil.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, this thing was so big, there must have been enough mass. There's no way it could have all like evaporated in the atmosphere, something had to have hit the ground.
So let's talk about
Talk about Chelyabinsk first or second?
No, let's talk about the lake first.
Okay, let's do that first then.
This lake, Lake Cheko, as we mentioned, has been, I guess, suggested as
the place where it touched down.
As a possible site for a meteor. And it goes back and forth. It's either it is the crater itself, or it's hiding a big chunk of a meteor. It just happened to fall into this biggest lake and
like it sort of rocketed off to the side and ran over there and hit the lake.
Yeah, just by happenstance, happened to disappear.
Right in the middle.
Basically, yeah.
That's why there is no Nessie in that lake.
Yeah.
She was cooked off.
We said that they did a ton of sampling of the silt and the lake bed that concluded that it was about 5,000 years old, so that kind of gets rid of that theory. Although, that ended up being wrong about the actual time of when the lake was created, but it's been back and forth pretty much the entire time.
A lot of scientists working on this and arguing back and forth about it.
There were studies in 2008 and 2017 that say the trees surrounding the lake are much older than 100 years old.
And they should have been knocked down.
They should have been knocked down.
Right.
Yep.
Okay.
And core samplings of the bedrock indicate a lake of at least 280 years old, which isn't prehistoric, but it's not 110.
Yeah.
However, studies from 2001 and 2009 indicate that the shape of the lake was consistent with an atmospheric crater of some kind, and further realized that the sediment could have easily been built up over 100 years instead of just 5,000 years or 800 or 280 years or anything like that.
And actually, the fact that it actually looks like it might have been a meteor impact doesn't mean it was this one. It could have been a previous
one. Could have been a really old one.
Thousands of years ago,
I'll just say that general consensus at the time of this recording, because it could change it any day, that is that at least the majority of this lake existed prior to this meteor hit or whatever it was.
Yeah, because think about, let's just pretend that what we jokingly talked about in the beginning of this theory actually happened, that this chunk of, not the entire meteorite or whatever it is,
a piece of it
happens to just conveniently land in this big ass lake.
That's 5 miles away from the epicenter.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay, it's still going to be really, really hot and moving extremely fast, and such that it is probably going to, if it doesn't push all the water out of the lake or boil it all off, which are things that you think, well, meteors would do because they're so freaking hot. But even if it doesn't do that, it is probably going to cause so much disturbance in the water, undercurrents and impact, like cavitation almost, that the whole lake bed is going to be stirred up. All of that sediment that would be going down would probably get all mixed up, and that lake would be one very dirty, dirty, non-life supporting environment because of all of the stuff floating into it for a significant period of time.
Well,
so that would make the stuff that they try to pull not make sense, because you would think, bear with me here, if you pull core samples from five areas, they should be relatively similar in profile. But if the whole thing has been stirred up like a kid sticking a straw in a milkshake, then nothing's going to match from one sample to the next. And that would, A, throw your results off, and B, should be an indicator, wait, something really, really catastrophic happened in this aquatic ecosystem. So I don't think that could have happened, because it's just, it would have been so much turmoil in there.
You think it would have been obvious then?
I think it would have been obvious that nothing matched from one spot to the next. And so it shouldn't make any sense. And I would think that it would be to such a degree that it would be very obvious.
Yeah, I think that the thing I don't really like about it is that the angle of the lake is essentially north-northwest of the impact site.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Whereas the best estimates I've heard from scientists is that the meteor itself came in kind of from essentially north 115 degrees east. So essentially, that would be east-southeast, which means that if it was a fragment of this comet, meteor, whatever it was, it would have had to come in essentially from the east, like I said, east, southeast, come in, and then this other piece would have had to somehow fragment off and
90 hang, degrees hang, or something?
Well, not 90 degrees, but we're talking at least 45, 50 degrees.
Which is a pretty severe angle.
Make a sharp right turn to go up and hit the ground up here at this lake. So, you know, that's one of the things I can't quite, that kind of makes me doubt the whole lake hypothesis to begin with.
I totally agree. I discount the lake pretty mm-hmm. adamantly. The theory that most scientists seem to be a part of at this point is that a comet came down towards Earth, but slowed significantly and then just blew up in midair. Apparently, a stony asteroid about 33 feet wide, which is 10 meters wide, which is big, can produce an explosion of about 20 kilotons, which is similar to that of the Fat Man bomb.
Yeah, that wasn't...
We didn't do a good naming those.
No, I'm sorry. Is it Randall Monroe, the guy who writes XKCD? Is that his name? I always want to say Randall Flagg, but that's the guy from The Stand. You gave me that What If book of his.
Yeah.
And I just finished it, and I was laughing because he was doing some problem in the end, and it was, everything is related to the size of Fat Man and Hiroshima. And
It is.
I was like, oh my God, it really is. Everything is.
It's just an easy way to kind of signify the amount of damage that can happen.
Yeah, because if you say somebody like a truckload of dynamite, well, so what?
We want to see the
kind of carnage it can create.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, exactly. By that number that we gave in the beginning, that big of an asteroid would still be about 1,000 times less powerful than the explosion.
Yeah,
but it has been downgraded a little bit, but not to that level.
No, not that far. It's been downgraded, I think, by more recent simulations down to 3 to 5 megatons.
But still...
Which is still far more than 20 kilotons.
Yeah.
A lot more.
Yeah.
But they're saying that, just to put it in perspective, the Chelyabinsk meteor we're talking from 5 years ago was estimated to be about 17 to 20 meters wide and about 11,000 tons.
Mm-hmm.
So then, and that's still pretty decent size. Did not come anywhere close to producing any kind of devastation on a scale of what we saw here at Tunguska.
Yeah. And just briefly, we'll talk about that meteor in a second. But the reason that we know about the dimensions of a stony meteor and how much blast it can produce is because the United States Air Force has been actually tracking a ton of upper atmosphere explosions of this size, so they're able to kind of extrapolate out. They happen all the time in our upper atmosphere most of these things explode.
There's so much crap floating around in our solar system. It's scary.
Yeah,
you know, I'm actually surprised that at least every now and again one of our satellites isn't just smeared.
Yeah.
You know, because...
I think they are. We just don't know about them so much.
Maybe they don't tell us, but I mean, that could, you know...
Why do you think your Instagram feed just went down?
Yeah, maybe that's what it is.
It's not because you put up those really gross photos. It's because the satellite got smashed.
Yeah.
Oh.
There's an estimate just by these same people who do these models all the time that an explosion like the Tunguska one could happen about once every 300 years. So there's some precedent of it, but... It's unlikely. I know Steve really wants to talk about this other incident.
The Tunguska one is... So I have some... The math that is recorded for Tunguska and Chelyabinsk, they seem to be calculated in a different way. And I think part of it is because we have such good visual data of the most recent one in that area. Because it all depends on the angle or trajectory of the thing through the atmosphere. They never fall straight down. They always come in at a glancing angle.
Yeah.
So then they experience a lot more turbulence and friction, which then burns them up. And so, of course, Chelyabinsk, I had it here that it was equated to a 400 to 500 kiloton explosion. Okay, well, that's because this thing appeared to have been completely and totally solid rock all the way through, and not nearly as big as what they say that the Tunguska one was.
Yeah.
But I can, the problem, of course, is that Tunguska didn't leave any residue on the ground, any large bits and pieces.
Which led to an alternate theory of a comet.
Right.
Yeah.
But there are things that, I mean, it could be a comet or it could be, it's not always a comet, but I've read about asteroids or meteoroids that are basically a giant shell of stone and rock with a giant ice interior. So it's not so much an asteroid or a comet because it's not moving like a comet, but it's just, it's the snow cone thing you get at the county fair where they put the sprinkles on the outside, but it's all ice inside. It's the interstellar version of that without the waffle cone.
That's right. They call that the Tunguska.
Yes, one of those. But it could be that by the time it got close enough, it finally burned through the rock layer. That when the whole thing just went boom, it did drive a whole bunch of crap into the earth. It just turned out that crap happened to be super dense ice, which then melted.
It could be.
It's the old magic knife or knife blade or knife bullet theory,
And that would actually also explain that glowy stuff we were talking about
the ice crystals.
Yeah, that it could have been ice crystals that got stuck in the atmosphere for a couple days, because that's how long that was going on, that glowy technical term phenomenon was.
Yeah, but yeah, the mystery is still there. I mean, a lot of people think this is totally solved, but it actually isn't quite. There's still some debate between the asteroid theory and the comet theory, believe it or not.
The snow cone theory?
Yeah, yeah. And the reason, again, back to what I was saying, before they downgraded it to from 15 to 20 megatons, and they downgraded the explosion to 3 to 5, before they were saying, okay, it would have to have been X mass to produce this explosion, therefore something had to have hit the planet. Now that they've downgraded it to a smaller mass, therefore a smaller explosion that happened closer than we thought, then I'm not so sure that the comet theory is as necessary as it was seen to be previously. That's where the comet theory kind of came from, is because comets are kind of dirty snowballs that have some big chunks of rock, but they're also held together by methane and frozen water, a.k.a. ice, and that would break apart, create a huge boom, but the constituent parts are small enough, they would all disintegrate before hitting the surface. But at the same time, you know, our understanding of some of these objects, like Steve was saying, has changed. We know that asteroids, for example, aren't all the same.
Yeah.
Some of them may look like balls. We look at them up closely now, and they look like sort of clumps of rocks kind of held together just by a slight mutual attraction of gravity and stuff like that.
Well, the other difficulty is, of course, at the angle, depending on the exact angle that it came in, when this thing exploded, it could have launched all of the rocky material forward in this kind of projection up and away and sent it hundreds of miles out before those bits came crashing down, which would be outside of the blast zone. So then nobody's looking there because, well, all the flattened trees are here, so let's look in here for the bits. Yeah. And they've actually been thrown away, kind of like you see it with volcanoes. Sometimes you'll see those weird smoky balls that'll just go pew, and it's just the random weird ones that get thrown way out. That same phenomena can happen, and it just depends on what the material is.
Yeah, it's a big old mystery still, though.
It is. I mean, it's a celestial object of some sort.
I would agree.
UFO, comet, asteroid, or something else.
Paper
UFOs.
Yeah. But most likely a meteor. But maybe a comet. I mean, there's no...
A fragment of a comet.
A piece of a comet, too. I mean, our understanding of comets has been changing, too.
It has.
We used to think they were just all big snowballs, but they could be all kinds of different things. They don't have to be one thing or the other. Yeah. So I can see a comet with a big old chunk of rock right at the core of it, that would be big enough to make a big boom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you guys have any other things you want to add to this?
Let me think. We talked about Chupi last week, so not this week. Yeah. Okay. UFO, we did that whole thing.
I've got nothing, but if I think of it, I'll interrupt you in what you're going to do next.
Yeah.
Cool. Do you know what I'm going to do next is just say, it was clearly Da Vinci.
Yeah, it was clearly Da Vinci. Yeah.
And that's all I have to say.
I like Da Vinci with Chupi behind him with a knife to Da Vinci's throat, that kind of thing.
Take me back to our home world.
Yeah. Take me back to the 20th century.
Well, I guess that's it for this episode then.
Okay, we figured that one out.
Yeah.
Take that, scientist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're better than you are. Ha. Uh-huh. That's not true. It's not even close.
Not even close.
Yeah. If you are listening to this episode, you know where you're listening to us at. It could be Stitcher Premium. It could be our website. It could be iTunes. Wherever you're listening to us, please subscribe, leave a comment and a rating so everybody else can find us, etc. For those of you who don't know, we are on Stitcher Premium. You join it, you get episodes ad-free 4 days early and some bonus content once a month. It's pretty cool. If you are listening to us on the website, you can find links to our sciencey research.
Because it's more better that way?
It's more better that way. Also, you can find links to our merchandise stores and episode lists of every single episode we've done. Lots of fun stuff on the website. The website is thinkingsidewayspodcast.com. You can connect with us on social media. So we've got a Facebook page that you can like. We've got a Facebook group that you can join. If you're going to join, you should answer the questions. And they are yes and Thursday. You can find us on Twitter at Thinkin Sideways. You can find us on Instagram where we are Thinking Sideways Podcast.
Lots of good stuff out there.
If all of
unless it goes down because the satellite gets knocked out of orbit. Mm.
If all of that is too complicated for you and you just want to send us an email, well, good news, we've got an email address too. That email address is thinkingsidewayspodcast@gmail.com. All of that having been said, we're going to go ahead and blast on out of here.
Yeah. I don't know, kaboom or something. I don't know.
Hey, I'm going to go get in the freezer. I've got some of those drumstick ice creams that I think I'm going to use to model how this worked. I'm pretty sure the waffle cone part burned off first. So I've got a torch. Mm. Joe, you hold the snow cone. We're going to make it happen.
Perfect.
Okay. All right. Devin gets the AR-15.